pulled up, so I'll read that when it's that time. Just one.
Okay. Okay. Are we having issues with the feed, or like, is anybody else's stream kind of flickering?
Yeah, mine is. It's probably okay. Billy's end.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't mine, because I...
Yeah, it did this the last time we were streaming it like this through Zoom.
Okay.
I don't know if Zoom just doesn't like my fourth screen or what's going on, but
okay.
I'm going to record it locally as well, and if need be, we'll replace the video that YouTube puts up there with my local recording. So, but kind of same way as last time, Sue. I'll send you a message in the chat that you're good to start.
Gotcha.
I've got both the opening ident and the little intro piece that I always do queued up, ready to go. So I'll run those. You guys will see those as well. But then I'll give you the thumbs up on the chat then that you're good to go.
All right.
I think I figured it out. I don't think Zoom likes my fourth screen, so I've got it unplugged. Is it flickering on your guys' side right now or not?
It is not on mine.
Okay, good. I don't see it in the stream either on my preview here.
Sue, do you see it flickering? Oh, she gave you the thumbs up. Look at her. Look at that little Zoom beast, we'll call her.
That's right. I know all the tricks, all the tricks. I'm just trying to like not sit down this whole, I've got some extra padding on my chair and everything, you know, but it's like, I've been sitting down a lot today and I'm not used to that.
That's what I'm wondering. We'll find out here in a second.
Oh, you want this?
Okay, so. Diane, can you say something for me?
Hi, Billy. You're my favorite.
There we go. It was weird. My audio went away, and I'm like, what the heck happened? So, okay.
All right.
And we're still waiting on Brian and Nan, correct?
Yes.
Let me go back to...
And Todd, maybe, is he on here?
Yeah, that would be good, wouldn't it?
There he is. Just hoping I can read this statement okay. I'm not used to wearing my bifocals, so I've been practicing how to hold my head.
Getting old is so much fun, isn't it?
Hopefully my contact order comes in soon. The worst is steps, like they all run together for me.
Yeah. Did you just get those glasses?
No, they're my glasses. I just...
Okay, yeah, you just don't wear them that often.
No, I put them on before I go to bed when I take my contacts out, and that's about it. They said that the manufacturer of contacts is running behind as well. So
I
guess everybody is, you know, impacted by the COVID and workforce constraints. So
I guess we went up today.
Yes, we did to red.
Yep.
Really? Union County did?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, Brian says he's logging on right now.
Mandatory mask.
Yeah.
Starting tomorrow at 6, I think. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, that's it.
Hi, Ryan.
Hello.
Hey, you know what, guys? I'm having a little problem. You guys are all on the right on my screen. My paperwork's right in the middle, but I can't get my paperwork to move up.
Oh, I think Billy's going to control that paperwork.
Oh, okay. He's going to scroll it up? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Just want to make sure I wasn't responsible for that.
I've got that up there as kind of the default screen right now for when we start the stream live. So just kind of as a placeholder until I get everything else going.
Great. Thank you.
You are welcome.
With me, Billy, you never know. It's an age thing. You know, I'm not too techie. But don't tell my son that.
I won't. Don't worry.
Yeah, he always says he gets it from you, Amy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right.
He thinks I need to go to school.
If you guys can go ahead and mute yourselves real quick, I'm going to go ahead and take the stream live. I won't start anything, though, until Brian is in.
Okay. Nan, are you going to?
Yeah, I'm trying to turn my camera on. Let me see. There you go.
All right. Hi, Todd. Hi, Nan.
Hello.
Brian said he's logging on, so... And that was a couple minutes ago. 4:57. Hopefully he's logging on to the right meeting.
All right, Sue, he's coming in now. I'm going to mute everybody. And then I'll text you in the chat when we're ready to go.
Okay. Hey, can you guys hear me all right?
Yep. Yep. We got you, Brian.
Okay.
I'm going to go ahead and, yeah, I'll say if you can keep yourself muted, I'm going to get the stream started and I'm going to give Sue a text in the chat that we are good to go.
The following is a presentation of Marysville Exempted Village Schools.
Mm-hmm.
meeting of the Marysville Board of Education. Can we have a roll call, please?
Sorry, I had to unmute there. Mr.
Roll call.
Mr. Lucas present. Ms. Savage.
Here.
Ms. Powers.
Here.
Mr. Smith.
Here.
Ms. Devine.
Here. Thank you. And now if y'all stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, we should have a flag coming up here momentarily. I pledge allegiance
to the flag
of the United States of America and to the Republic
for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. First on our agenda this evening, I would accept a motion to approve our agenda.
So moved.
We'll give you the second, Mr. Smith. Roll call.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next on the agenda, we have a presentation about the first year of our alternative pre-kindergarten program. Looks like we're having an issue with the volume on there.
Real close.
Live in person, socially distanced with Sherry Bowserman, who was our classroom teacher in our first year of the alternative kindergarten program this year. So rather than do a screencast, we thought that we would let the board eavesdrop in on a conversation talking about the first year of the program so everybody can get an update on it. So, Sherry. It's good to see you.
Yes. It's good to be around people.
Yes. We've talked throughout the course of the school year, and then it came to an abrupt interruption about the successes of the program. So I know that it was successful, but in your eyes, what were some of the highlights of the school year in the All-K program?
For me, it was seeing the not just the academic growth, but that social-emotional growth that they all showed. But academically, for a half-day program, I was amazed, especially a program that ended abruptly, that I had kids that came in with a goal. Our district goal was be able to write your name, recognize your letters and your name, and a few others. But exiting the year, the average student knew 20 letters, 21 sounds. So to me, that was amazing that they could do that. Social-emotional growth was amazing, that they'd come in, they couldn't share, they didn't know how to share, they didn't know how to ask, and they learned how to do that.
Yeah.
And so they're really ready to transition into a full-day kindergarten program, and they'll be very confident.
That's great. So let's talk a little bit about the academics. So we talked about priorities that we were going to have headed in, and we really streamlined it.
We did. We cut some things out and really focused more on the language arts piece. We had a lot of math goals, and I found that the kids coming in were really successful at those math goals that we had set. And so we changed the math goals a little bit, but really put a bigger focus on the language arts piece and pushing them forward on that and spending more of my time on helping them to learn to love to read and love school.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So learn to love to read.
Absolutely.
Phonemic awareness, letter names, letter sounds. Mission accomplished there?
Yes.
So what was the data that you shared? I think you had, we had 34 total kids, right?
We had 34 total kids. And all of the kids that I gave the past to before remotely passed with flying colors. Okay. I had one student that came in at what we call level D that went clear to K-1, which is, I don't know what K-1 is, but it's third or fourth grade, right?
Well, it's that advanced phoneme level.
So and she's reading now, which is an amazing feat for a half day program.
Yeah. So for, we're talking a little educational ease here. So the PASS is our phonological awareness screening test. And they came in at the lowest level, and a high percentage of them left at the basic phoneme.
They did.
Or advanced phoneme level, which is really our expectation that we want towards the end of kindergarten and first grade. So a lot of our all K kids are transitioning into kindergarten this fall. Really
jump started.
Curve.
They had jump started. They will be so ready to sit down in that kindergarten program and be so successful.
You, in a conversation that we had, you mentioned some specifics that we didn't anticipate as far as transition plans for kids, as far as like speech goals. So they're like hitting the ground running, and we're not having to learn them as they go into kindergarten. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So there were several kids who came in with some speech issues and some social emotional issues. And we addressed those this year rather than waiting until they were in kindergarten and trying to figure out what's going on here. When you have a higher number of students that you're working with, it's harder to reach that goal and move them forward. And so the speech pathologist, Andy Schoen, was right on that with me.
Right.
And he didn't make an IEP necessarily, but he would pull them out and work with them individually or in a small group. And some kids will not need service next year because he hit them early. And we did an IEP for one girl that has some social emotional needs. So when she hits kindergarten, they already know that this is coming. And they've already started setting up a plan for her to meet those trauma needs.
Yeah, so it's just another way that we're jump-starting the personalization of the plans for those kids in their educational program.
And the parents were so happy with everything. Yeah. I mean, I felt blessed by them that they embraced me and let me have the freedom to learn this program and gave me grace as I would say, you know, this isn't really working, so let's try this. And it was a learning process for me, but I would do it again in a heartbeat. I gave up a position that I loved and I had a great team to a position I didn't know how long it would last and no team. And waited through the year, and now I can see how beneficial it was, and it was really worth it.
Yeah.
So thank you, board.
Yeah. And you know, to Sherry's credit, you know, her expertise transitioning in, starting a new program, I mean, you lifted it off the ground.
Yeah, I didn't have a choice, and I wasn't going to let it fail.
There you go. So
because I felt that this was the best thing for these kids.
Yeah.
And always have.
I love the passion.
Yeah.
But you were the perfect choice.
I love it.
So, okay, so
makes me a little teary.
A parent, we're talking about parents, a parent success story. So 34 parents made the choice to take the all K route. And then enter COVID.
Yeah.
Enter the interruption. And then you sent out a video. I know a lot of us have seen it. Tell us what happened with those families that came all the way out to Delaware to visit you.
Yeah. So I asked parents if they wanted to share their email so that they could set up Skype meetings or whatever with individual kids or small groups of kids so the kids could see their friends. And 18 parents agreed, yeah, we'll share our email. And so I sent that out. And then one day, one family said, hey, can we come out and play at your house? And I said, sure. And so I'm ready for them to come play. And they said, well, we need you to come down to your driveway. And so I came out, and 18 of my students, all those people on that list, drove by in a parade telling me goodbye for the year. And that was unbelievable to me that they would drive all that way to honor me, basically. Yeah.
That's Marysville, right?
Yeah, it is.
That's a great story. And we watched that video, and it was just perfect at a time when it, we were honestly
struggling
to have something like that.
Yeah.
Really uplifting. So
it was.
So we went from 34 enrolled to projected 49 this year. So
which
the program
is
going to grow. So we're actually going to have a colleague this year.
Yay.
Right? What have we learned from the inaugural year to make this next year even better?
I learned very quickly that there were not enough social emotional goals.
Okay.
And spent some time with Mark Gallagher talking about that and making sure I was headed in the right direction with the district, because there weren't social emotional goals yet mm-hmm. in the continuum.
Right.
And so Mark and I talked about that, and then we set up goals that should be really perfect for this group.
Yeah.
And added those in. But since there weren't goals there, I started focusing my read alouds that usually I would have pulled out just language arts things from, but I focused them on social emotional read alouds, mm-hmm. pulling out the language arts things. So that's a step that I think we did right now for next year.
I agree.
And
sure.
We took out, like I said earlier, some of those math goals, and we're moving forward with the phonemic awareness and that great base of love for reading, because that's where we need them.
Uh-huh.
We need them to love school, love coming, and learn to read with passion.
Yeah, you don't have to convince me of that. That's right.
Okay. I'm trying.
So, well, it just makes sense. What we're doing just makes sense.
Oh, absolutely.
From an early lit perspective, from a social emotion perspective, this program, it's just right minded by kids and families.
And as word kind of filters through the community, more and more people are reaching out and asking, and you know, you see, hey, Maysville has been a wonderful program, or so there are things out there that are starting to, you know, weed out into the community. So I can't see anything but growth.
Yeah, not just Marysville, but we had two districts from outside Marysville inquire and come in mm-hmm. and trying to reduplicate it, mm-hmm. Which is great.
Yeah.
You know, helping what we're doing in Marysville is helping kids we're not even. We don't even meet and come through our doors, which is exciting too. Right?
Yes, it's great because it's a need
mm-hmm.
that we identified and took hold of.
Love it. Yeah. So, last thing, we know that this fall we're going to have an unusual school year. We don't know the ins and outs of it yet. How are we getting ready for that? Got any strategic plans?
Well, I've thought long and hard. And they're 4 and 5, and so 4 and 5 year olds need tons of manipulatives to learn. So I've already purchased like these mesh Ziploc bags that can be sanitized easily by just spraying. I'm gathering manipulatives, so lots of ABC sorting, name sorting, just to get them going at the beginning of the year so they'll have something to take home with them.
Perfect.
Besides looking at a screen.
Yeah.
In the short period last year, I did send home things twice,
right.
But it was hard to, you know, get in the building and pull things. And so this summer, I've just been trying to collect and organize some activities for them to do at home that are hands-on.
Right. So we can heighten the instruction through the parents a little bit and really mm-hmm. support our families to do some of that.
Make
early
it a little
lit.
Easier for parents. Then kids can play with those manipulatives and. Yeah.
In the beauty of where the kids are developmentally from a language arts perspective and a literacy perspective is some of those things are easy to do. So we know that we can teach others to do it. So
correct.
TA is so important, but it's not rocket science. You just
correct.
Need to know why you're doing it, right?
Yes.
And the letter names and letter sounds, we have specific strategies on that. But you're right, the screen is one way, but nothing beats that multisensory approach. So I'm glad that you had the foresight to start collecting that stuff so we can get it home. So, covered the parade, which was the best thing. anything else that you want to add before we wrap it up?
I know I thanked the board earlier in the year for this program. I just want to say thank you for taking the initiative, running with it, and trusting me to try really hard to do my best for what these little kids need. And just thank you.
Yeah, I would echo the same thing. The support of our school board and our community to do what's best for our kids is unrivaled.
I agree.
And you have done such a remarkable job this first year. I'm really looking forward to where it goes moving forward. It's just one of many exciting things that are taking place in our district. Thank you for taking
the
time.
Thank you.
So that was an amazing presentation. And I don't know if Cherry or Steve are watching right now, but I hope they'll watch it at some point, because I know Cherry has thanked us several times, but I'm sure I'm with the rest of us that we couldn't be more appreciative of everything she did. I just love that. I mean, it talked about innovative, collaborative, and inspirational. I mean, they just hit all three of those. Knocked it out of the park. Yeah. Did anybody have any questions of the presentation or any other comments?
I just wanted to comment that I really love the fact that she used the read aloud time for SEL, kind of bringing that social emotional learning right into the read alouds. I thought that was a great activity.
Yeah. I mean, she's really just doing everything that we want our students to do, which is, you know, you learn things, kind of review them and revise and, you know, look for ways to improve. So it's just great work. Okay, next.
There's a delay because I'm on a satellite, but I just wanted to say I hope that we can address the connection with parents. There were 18 parents that we were able to make and maintain good connection with. And I know coming into this year, there's a likelihood of some disruptions and so forth. So I hope that I expect we've got something in place that will try to help improve that. So, but it was exciting to listen to this, and I think Cherry did a wonderful job.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's move on, and I believe we do have one. We do have a person from public participation, and with our Zoom meetings, we've just asked people to email their public participation, and Diane's going to go ahead and unmute herself and read it for us.
All right. Hello, my questions statements pertain to the start of school. I would like to know how the schools are partnering with our local health department and how an outbreak of COVID would be handled. Specifically, do we have enough tests in our county to test teachers, staff, and students? How will parents, teachers be notified of a positive case in their class? Emailing isn't enough when you were talking about people's health and safety. Will the entire class, teacher, have to quarantine? What about siblings and tracing their contact with other students and teachers? Who will be handling this? Our health department was overwhelmed on Tuesday with people needing tests. They had to close for the day. So it concerns me that handling an outbreak in a school would be challenging and slow. We have several school districts in our county. This is something that needs to be a serious topic of discussion before we can consider opening doors. If we go into the school year thinking none of this will be an issue, then we truly have failed our students, teachers, staff, and families. So I hope our Board of Education has or is working on this plan and will communicate the answers, assuming it will be required. Will masks be provided to our students, staff? What if students disobey the mask requirement and refuse to comply? What is the disciplinary action, if any? I know you will not have any answers to my questions right now, but I appreciate your time, and I hope that you take what I have said and consider looking into my concerns and questions. Thank you, Renee Denniston.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for reading that for us. I think you've got you have some plans to reach out to them with some information.
Yes, I mean, certainly Jonathan or I will follow up, but a couple of things just that we've talked about before is weekly, all the area superintendents are meeting with the health department every Wednesday morning to talk through issues, ask questions, get guidance. Many of these questions have been asked, tests, restart to school, all those type of things. So our plan and every piece of our plan is actually run through the health department for feedback and guidance as well. So it's very collaborative relationship. And I think some of these questions will be answered in my presentation as well in just a little bit, but we'll follow up with Renee as well.
Okay, thank you. And I know that there are several board members who have been attending some of the Ohio School Board Association town hall meetings, and some of these questions come up, and there's chat boxes that have comments from a lot of different people who are board members in different districts. And so I think there's just a lot of collaboration and sharing of information and plans and ideas and questions. So they're all good questions, and we know we have to address them. So okay, next on our agenda, it's time for reports. So Nan, do you have a High Point report?
Yes, just a real brief one. Number one, in regards to the building project, they're still struggling with the renovation budget issues. There's a lot of issues in with regard to cost of steel and building construction supplies. And so they are still struggling with that issue. The second thing is they've been working on their High Point Return to Campus program, just like all the school districts are. They have a unique challenge to deal with in regards to many of the programs that they have a hours requirement in order to get the certification that the students are studying for while they're at High Point. So their plan, as issued right now and communicated just today, they will have juniors attend 2 days a week, seniors attend 2 days a week, and every other Friday, the juniors and seniors will rotate. And they've also created a off-site online plan in the event of an outbreak of COVID-19. So I'm sure it has to be very, very complicated dealing with 13 different school districts and transporting students from all those type of districts. So I'm sure it's gonna be a work, continuous work activity, but that's their plan for right now. All Marysville students that have High Point instructors here in Marysville, they will just use the Marysville plan that as established. So that's it.
Thank you, Nan. Next, the superintendent report.
All right, so I am going to give you a couple updates, and then we'll queue up a presentation for our back to school plan. I just wanted to kick off and say this week I had the opportunity to be in a conference call with Lieutenant Governor Husted to talk about access and equity of internet across the state of Ohio. And I can tell you that I feel a real sense of urgency and commitment on behalf of the state to support school districts in different ways by possibly, maybe some grant opportunities, large quantity buying opportunities for hotspots and different things like that. So that's going to be a continued work group, but I was very excited to hear their enthusiasm and interest in helping schools. So I thought that was a very positive conversation. I wanted to remind you that over the past couple weeks, obviously, we've been working with a lot of people. A lot of parents have reached out by email, honestly, in show of support and appreciation of the time and thought that we're putting into our plan, and offer suggestions and input into things that they would like to see considered. We've also worked with our task force and medical advisory group in order to build the plan that we're going to share with you currently. We're gonna try this in a little new way. Billy's going to pull the presentation up and run it, so we'll try to be coordinated the best we can. So, Bill, you can go ahead and there you go. All right. So as we talked before, there are many more unknowns than knowns. We have worked really hard to really focus on the things that we can control and give an opportunity to really, really rethink school under these unusual circumstances. So as you've seen this slide before, but it continues to come back, we're going to plan for the worst. We're going to hope for the best. And we have plans that are ready to turn on a dime. So as you know, last year we stopped the school year abruptly. I do believe that it would be fair to say that we're pretty convinced that someone will get COVID this year, whether that be a student, staff member, I hope not. But I think that even given the information that came out today, that it's going to happen. So our plans have to be adaptable and flexible as we move into August. Everyone keeps saying the fall, and Ms. Savage and I talked today, it's really just a few weeks away for us, so. All right, we see school as we're gonna call it normal school, but it might not look as we are used to. Within our walls and brick and mortar, different things come going on. We may have hybrid models happening, targeted support, but we also see that education pipeline running in and out in different directions. We'll have students on remote learning platforms. We're gonna have students who are quarantined. We might have students that are high risk and their families need to withdraw them for a certain period of time. So really it's about creating a plan that not only takes care of what's happening in between the brick and mortar, but also those extensions that are coming out of our building. And the one thing I would like to make very, very clear, that 100% of us at Marysville Schools want our kids and staff to be back all together as quickly as possible. But we have to do that with weighing our responsibility for community health and the restrictions that are around us. There is, I can't think of one person that I could talk to that doesn't say we want kids back or we want to be back together as a staff. And so this is not an easy plan to push forward, knowing that that may not happen the way we would like. Okay, so we, this information we sent out to parents, and as you know, our school enrollment is just under 5,200. So as of today, we had over 4,000 responses. So I feel really good about that response. And we know our parents are, you know, paying attention to our conversation. And this isn't a final decision for parents, but we were at the point where we started to need some information to inform different models and approaches to next year. So this first question asks, if we open fully, are you going to come back? Basically, you know, what's your intention, or do you feel more comfortable choosing a remote platform? So if school reopened in what we're going to say regular, whatever that means right now, compared to keeping your kid home and doing remote learning, you can see 84% of our parents said their children will return, and 16% said they would choose remote learning. We also said, if we do a hybrid, some mix of 2 days in school, 3 days out, so a blend of in-person instruction and remote, does that change your mind at all? As you can see, it does a little bit. So about 88% of families said that on a hybrid schedule, their kid would return, and about 12% are still gonna stay on that remote platform. The next question really was, how does mask, or does the idea or concept of mask change your mind? We've received several emails and feedback about students wearing masks. And so you can see 82% still believe their child will return even if there's a mask policy that will require masks to be worn. I apologize for the 10.8. We had to draw it in. It wouldn't pick up on the chart. So I apologize for that. So you can kind of see that masks weren't a huge indicator necessarily of if a kid would return or not. And as you know, I think I've talked to the board more on more than one occasion about my concern with transportation and some of the limits and condensed spaces and challenges we see with transportation. And so we basically ask if you had the opportunity, even can you partner with us and help us out? Could you bring your kid to school? Really, we are pretty pleased with 45% almost said that they could provide their own transportation, which is a real game changer for us. We're allowed two students in a seat as long as they have masks on now. So this will really help our ability to transport kids back and forth to partnering with our parents. So we are very pleased with that. So for the start of the school year, as you know, Monday night at the special meeting, you approved a memo of understanding with the union to push back the student first day to August 24th. And we'd focus the entire week on staff with remote learning, new policies and procedures. And really we see this as teaching staff as well as bus drivers, we're all going to have a new portion to our job that we need to learn. So that will be, that's more of a reminder to you. Okay. And then I want to kind of capture the process one more time. We've had ongoing meetings with medical advisory team where we've been able to share protocols or best practices. They've shared kind of screening checks that take place in their office that we're going to be able to replicate in school. So that's been a pretty powerful partnership as well. We've had a superintendent task force that's made up of teachers, support staff, parents, administrators. And really we looked at multiple designs of plans and then they had the opportunity to offer feedback. We also kind of took what we liked out of certain plans, like the best of different plans, and put them together to really get at our last plan. In addition, as I mentioned before, every week, the other superintendents in Union County and I, and surrounding counties, we've now added Tolls and Jonathan Alder to those meetings to share what we're doing and bounce ideas off one another. So in our plan, we had some guiding principles. We wanted to make sure we were paying attention to health considerations locally as well as on a larger scale. We also wanted to make sure we were accounting for our own reality here in our community in Marysville and the making sure we were paying attention to our community spread. I think as most of you know, Union County moved to a level red today. So how can we consider that in our decision-making and use multiple measures within our buildings to help limit that spread? Also, stakeholder input was very important. We've done several parent surveys, a staff survey, and the input from committees. We wanted to maintain our focus on personalized learning, not only for academics, but our social emotional needs of students. And also the issue of equity and access across our families. And as well, we want to remain fiscally responsible. As we know, we just received this week a very large sum of money in CARES money. So how do we best use that money to support students and staff as we re-enter in these uncertain times? So we are calling these instructional models. There's a continuum, as you can see, and you've seen this slide before. The only difference, quite honestly, is we've changed the name of if a parent is choosing from day one to go remote only, we are changing that to virtual academy. And there became the reason was the feedback from the advisory group was, when you call them both remote learning, we think it's the same experience. And we didn't ever intend it to be the same experience. And I'll explain that as we move through the slides. So level one is kind of the least restrictive, moving up to level four, which would be a full remote for everyone in the district. And the next couple slides break that down for you. All right. Every day for all students would be model one. And let me start by saying, if all 5,000 of our students showed up, we would not be able to implement this model. We cannot implement the 6-foot social distancing requirements if every single kid were to show up. That is why we started to ask parents, where are you? What are you thinking? So we can put square footage in each classroom and figure out how many students can be in each spot. So in this model, we would be asking parents to do health assessments at home, and we have a form for that prepared. All kids would wear face masks. We'd implement 6-foot social distancing. We really want to emphasize those healthy habits of hand washing and sanitizing. There'd be diversified lunchroom and lunch schedules. We would focus on grab and go breakfasts and things of that nature, so kids aren't congregating. We would not share supplies or computers. We would also restrict visitors to outside of school hours, so no visitors or volunteers during the school day. On the support side, we would meet our protocols for cleaning. We also know that we would have 2 students per seat on the bus. There would be no field trips, no large before, after, or during school events. So, for example, COSI on wheels or pep assemblies at this time, we would not be congregating for those. We would be able to offer SAC before and after school care. And as I mentioned before, the challenge really is on this motto is maintaining the 6-foot distance. You may have seen some school districts implement a 3-foot distance policy. What I can say is the recommendation from our insurance is to follow what the guidelines we were given from the state were in order to start school, and that was a 6-foot distance, not 3 feet. So I know that was a question some people had. This instructional level could apply to a district response or a building response. It could be a decision we make that some buildings are operating in this mode while others may be on a remote platform. So it will be dependent on what's happening within the buildings. On this model, we'll be tracking attendance through in-person format, kind of a traditional attendance. Instructional model number 2 is a hybrid model that would be about 50% in the building at a time. And it would be a rotation of similar to what High Point talked about, an AABB schedule. The difference would be on Wednesdays, there would not be school. So a cohort of students would attend on a day, like Monday, Tuesday would be A days. And another cohort would come Thursday, Friday. When you were not in school, you would be operating on a remote platform, kind of a blended model with some support and lessons through Schoology and Unified Classroom. The C student is a student is defined by Ohio Department of Education in Marysville as some of our most at-risk population. That's called, they refer to them as vulnerable students. So we'd be in having those students who were identified as C attend every day. So I think the next slide would show you what I'm talking about on a schedule. I think that makes it a little more clear. So on this, you can see where an A student, for example, would attend school Monday, Tuesday. They would do remote learning Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And the opposite for a B student. And I'm not talking letter grades here. This is your cohort letter. And then a C student would actually come every day. So some of those will be pre-decided in the C category, and some of those students may come in and out of that C category throughout the year, depending on need if we stayed in that model. All right, so pretty much the parameters for this hybrid schedule are the same as the first and the restrictions. At this level, we would perceive it only to be a district option, primarily because of busing. It would make it difficult if not everyone was on the hybrid schedule. And attendance would be tracked, I'm sorry, through in-person and remote learning formats. All right, so model three is a diversified hybrid. In this model, C students only would attend every day, and all other students would be remote learning. So those same students that were at the highest level of risk would attend school on a regular basis, following all the protocols that the other two levels have had. And this would, again, be a district-only policy. So all other students would operate on a remote learning platform with their classroom teachers while C students came to school. I think I have a schedule on the next slide as well. Well, maybe not. C students, we do an alternate breakfast and lunch plan. So when C students are attending, we would also look for ways to provide lunch and breakfast for students who are remote learning, specifically our students who are free and reduced lunch. In the spring, we were afforded a waiver to feed everyone. We have not been notified that that's gonna come back around again. So at first we would focus on free and reduced families in order to get breakfast and lunches to them. We would also be looking at just no large group activities, no student activities or extracurriculars under this model. So it'd be a fairly restrictive model. Model four would be remote learning for all. So this would be in concept the same as we were in the spring, but we are adding pieces to that. So we'd still be looking for a lunch plan. As I described, there would be no student activities or extracurriculars as well. Now, we also think this could apply to a class. For example, if we had an outbreak in Mrs. Devine's class, for example, then that class may turn to remote learning while the rest of the building stayed at a hybrid schedule or something to that effect. So we see some flexibility for that application. So one of the things that the advisory or task force team asked was, can you kind of put schedules to this so I can see it? And so I did put some schedules together, but I want to reiterate once again that these are absolutely samples. I don't want someone to say, oh, I'll definitely be on from 10 to 1:30, but this would give you an idea of what remote learning would look like this August if we were to be in that format. So as you know, last spring we had to fly by the seat of our pants, and thank goodness our staff could implement on just a drop of a hat. So we know that we want to get better at getting the teachers in front of kids on a regular basis. So the idea for this would be that you would actually block time out. So students could come during that time, meet with their teacher. They would do their literacy instruction at scheduled times, or their math at a scheduled time. And we would push in unified arts during different blocks of times to support that. We would work with principals, or principals and guidance counselors would work with special situations that families may have, you know, if it was a scheduling conflict or things like that. And attendance would be tracked through those sessions. But there would be more of a structure to the day than last spring. So this would be an idea of what that might look like. The next slide, I believe, will show you a sample 5-12 schedule. Now, I would precursor this with, you know, Creekview operates in instructional blocks. So it might not be period one, period two, but it might be instructional block, whatever, A or B or literacy or whatever, however they are going to change those up. But this just gives you an idea. So in this case, students would Zoom with their teachers for about 25 minutes for, you know, mini lessons or activities. And so this gives a more regular touch point with our staff to students throughout the day if we were forced into a remote learning model. The one thing that we did hear also from the parent group that is something I'll talk about in a little bit was we had several families that have multiple children and maybe lived in the Raymond area. So if we set a schedule up like this, there would be a demand for three students to be on at the same time. And quite simply, their bandwidth could not support that. So we are working on some options for that with families. But in general, that would give you an idea of our expectations. We would have teachers be available before and after these hours for support for students within their workday, so that we could create multiple, you know, opportunities and touch points. So the virtual academy option is really a family choice. So if your family has decided that you do not feel comfortable, we fully understand that and support choice. So we want to help support that and be your choice virtually. So we are asking that if you choose that for a seventh grader through a 12th grader, that would be by semester. Instead of having a volume of kids kind of ebbing and flowing out of classrooms that we feel will be pretty difficult on students and staff, and that at K-6 we stick to a trimester. We'll make sure that those courses are aligned to the content standards of classroom instruction. Our ultimate goal is to have those classes built and moderated by our own staff through Schoology Unified Classroom. However, if the numbers are such that we can't make that work, we have explored a couple third-party vendors that we could engage with as well. So, but our goal is to have our teachers have told us before, they prefer to build their own content. We're working on those pieces now. But I think it's important to know that elementary, intermediate school age students, probably middle school students too, this choice will require more adult support as opposed to if our district went remote. This is a more independent, self-paced option with a little less structure, more flexible work time for students. So you wouldn't necessarily have to engage the student during the day. They could do it in the evening when their parents are home, or those kind of options. We'll track attendance through online format here on this option as well. So the next slide, I believe as well, they asked for a schedule. And so we put one together. Again, I want to say this is a sample schedule, because what we would hope to do with you as a family then is set up a schedule that helps you. We know from the spring that if students got in a routine of following a schedule with online learning, they did much better than picking up the device at different times in the day. So we highly encourage setting up routines like getting up in the morning, having your breakfast. Maybe you do reading first, but we integrated things like wellness activities, maybe conferencing with a staff member from the district to check in and see how you're doing. How do you get prepared for the next day? So again, this would be a sample, and it would be heavily dependent on, you know, if you're elementary or high school, what classes you need to take and those kind of things. But we would partner with you to help set that schedule up. And this would be a sample high school schedule. Same kind of idea. It's highly dependent on what the student would need. So to kind of show you what the different models would look like, I think we're a little off in this graphic, honestly. So model one could be building or district. Model two could be district. Model three could be across the board. Model four actually would be that full remote for parents. So I'll fix that before we send that one out to the community, because model four is the self-selection of remote. Does that make sense to clean that up a little bit? Yeah, sorry about that. The other thing that came up in the advisory group is the notion of changing the school calendar and making remote learning for the entire district from Thanksgiving until January 19th. And the idea really came as a result of looking at some models of colleges and the idea of parents and family traveling to other places. And the suggestion from the group was to let's go ahead and put that on the schedule that we would remote learn entire district from Thanksgiving to January 19th. And then if we don't need it, let's cancel it. If things get better, we're not you know, maybe we haven't been in remote. The one question was, well, if a building had been in remote a lot during the year, could they stay in school? And the response really was, well, if you had been in remote a lot during the year, you're probably headed for that same spot again, was kind of the feedback. So the idea of the committee was to go ahead and let's put that on the school calendar where we'd move to a remote platform to allow parents, you know, who travel out of state and to other places. And then it embeds a 14-day post-holiday quarantine as well. So that would put us at that level four remote learning for everyone. All right, decision-making framework. So I think if you've looked at other school districts' platform, they have heavily aligned themselves to a level one public emergency will absolutely mean we're level one in our plan. And that is not the intent of our plan. There are four levels in our plan, obviously. However, our intent is to use that to inform our thinking when that decision is made. But we also think that those levels could change and vary pretty rapidly. So we wouldn't want to be in hybrid 1 week, remote the next week, maybe remote again, and then back in hybrid because we're switching out of those levels. We would want to, we don't think that's in the right mind of students and learning. So we would use multiple measures in order to make the final decision, not just the color coding system. So I want to caution people not to just make a direct connect between those two things. A perfect example would be for the past 2 weeks we've been in yellow. This week we went in to red, and you know, maybe we would go back into, or orange, I'm sorry. Maybe we could go back to orange if we did the right things. I'm not sure. But we wouldn't want to keep jumping back between different models. Mask policy. So all staff are required to wear masks by the guidelines. All students, all K through 12, are required to wear masks when they're on our transportation. Then when we go to buildings, all K through 6, students will be required to wear a mask when they're in the hallway and classrooms, unless they're otherwise directed by a teacher. Teachers may afford at that level students mask breaks, but they're going to be under a certain criteria. The district is currently looking at purchasing some different tools that would allow for more frequent mask breaks, such as dividers at round tables that are clear, but we do not have those in our possession yet. So that would be an example of a mask break. Students 7-12, while they're in the buildings, would be expected to have masks on at all times. We do understand that there will be some issues with students wearing masks. So we will have an appeal process available on August 3rd, where students or parents will be able to complete some paperwork in a process in order to have their student be excused from that. If you cannot wear a mask, we are asking that you wear a face shield. Really the idea is about, you know, creating as many layers of protection as we can. So 6 foot distancing and a face mask in order to protect our students and staff. SAC, I mentioned before, will be able to return to before and after school SAC programming. We are also going to be able to offer a school day off program opposite of the AB. So if you're an A student, so you're coming to school on Mondays and Tuesdays, we are going to be able to offer you school day off programming on the B day. Vice versa, if you're a B student, we'll offer that on the A days for you. We will have no programming on Wednesdays because we're really focusing on cleaning up between the cohorts, as we have mentioned, and we'll be able to accommodate 54 students on each of those days, totaling 108 students. So that would be a new offering. We know that childcare may be an issue on the off days for parents who might not be able to work from home if we're in a hybrid schedule. So this would be able to help offset that a little bit. We anticipate that, I say this all the time, I feel like flexibility and adaptability, until the vaccine is here, we're gonna be the masters of flexibility. We will, for that reason, we will not announce which instructional model we will start on until August 3rd. And the reason for that is, it seems like things are changing so quickly in our community and in the state. We really don't know how things are going to change over the next couple weeks. So we'll make a formal announcement on the instructional model on Monday, August 3rd. Two questions that we are working on that really were brought about by the task force is that question about bandwidth. So we have a team working on some flexible models on if we move to remote learning and I have three kids, you know, how can we set up some schedules? So one of the ideas we're working on are, for example, multiple times throughout the day for a literacy block, and so that we can create some flexibility for parents. So there's a team working on that. And also to really give parents a clearer picture of what that academy will look like. So what their schedule can look like, what they can expect, and how it's going to be different than last spring. The sample schedules I put up tonight are not great examples, but we want to get that, give them something that's a little more robust. So when we ask them to make a decision, they have all the information they need. Currently, we are assessing staff leave requests. So we know that there are staff members that will not be able to return to work. So we're working on those. We do think that many of those teachers will fill the academy slots for us. So we're working on that. We're also building out the rest of kind of the operational guidelines so that parents will know, what do I do if, what happens if a teacher gets sick at school? What happens if my student gets sick at school? Where can I go to get my COVID test? What are the symptoms I look for in a COVID test? How will I be notified when maybe there's a student that's sick in my child's classroom? So all of those restart guide is just about complete. We'll be sending that out to families and posting it on our website. So that's currently in the works. July 24th, we plan to give the designation, if you're a hybrid, if we were to be in a hybrid model, what your letter is. So you'll be informed of that ahead of time before school starts. And that's just so parents can prepare. So I know parents still have to prepare for every model, but you would know if your kid would be an A if we're in a hybrid, a B, or a C. Also, open enrollment decisions and intra-district transfer decisions will be communicated by July 24th, which is next Friday. We'll also look to provide those two answers. So we'll look to, on the slide before, we'll look to answer both those questions by the 24th and make those public for people to see. And then by the following Friday, we're going to ask parents to kind of make their declaration for the next school year. So we ask you for, you know, that initial, what are you thinking? But now that you have, you know, all our options and all that information, what is your consideration for next year? So we would ask that that happen by the 31st of July. So all of that I know is a lot. So what kind of questions do you have for me?
First, before we ask questions, I just want to thank the task force. Thank you for your leadership of that task force. And we know they've spent a lot of time and effort going through a lot of different scenarios and bouncing things around. And we really appreciate the time that you've spent in bringing this forward to us. So with that, what kind of questions do we have?
I have a question. So when the when you provide the AABB designation, is that going to be through an email to the parents?
Building principals are going to communicate that, and it will be through the decision I think we reached today was going to be through an email. If it ends up to be different, we will communicate that to parents.
I have a question. I have a couple questions. What, Diane, how do the sports teams fit into this, or is that a completely separate set of plans?
So in those later models, we spoke to no extracurriculars. At this time, athletics, we're still on the kind of that last phase plan, so they're fully operational. And part of that is some of those decisions, I don't know if you saw that Ohio High School announced this week that they're still going to have certain elements that it's going to fall on districts to make some of those decisions now. For example, you know, are we going to play teams from Franklin County, or would they play us if we're a red? Or so those decisions have not been fully vetted through yet.
Okay, the other question I have is the model one, which is called Safe Return for All, it sounds like it's still a
a plan for when there's a pandemic. In other words, there's still no large school events, maintain 6 feet, wear masks. So isn't there also like a model zero or whatever, something that's even more open that could still possibly happen this year, I suppose, where there's just no restrictions?
I don't think so. I mean, even today when I listened to the governor, they said, even if you're yellow, don't think that you're out of the woods because it's still present in your community. That's why there's not a green rating. So until there's a vaccine made available, I wouldn't say that we perceive a model where everyone just comes back with no restrictions.
So when you meet with the health groups and when you meet with the superintendents groups, everybody's just assuming that there's going to be restrictions on the teachers and kids the entire year of some sort.
We would anticipate that, yes.
Okay.
Diane, speaking to the question that Nan asked, as kids are assigned to the A or B group, are efforts made to make sure that multiple kids in a family are all going to end up in the same group?
Yes, so definitely. And there will be an appeal process where if parents need to change their day for example, work, maybe they don't work Fridays, but their kid got assigned Monday, Tuesday. So there'll be an appeal process that a parent can engage in. One of the complicated things is in our student system, unless the parent has linked their children, it's not a clear linkage between families in our computer system. And we also have some families that have children in the same household with different last names. So there's not one clear way for us to get that. So it's a pretty large undertaking for the principals right now. So they are working. We attempted to do a straight alpha split, like let's say district wide, it's A through K, and then, you know, but that split didn't land in the same place in every building. So we are working on those currently in order to make sure that we can capture kids that are of the same family or the same household. Guaranteed, we will not capture every single kid. That's why, you know, we'll need parents to respond through the appeal process and talk to principals to work out those kinks. But principals, we're going to make it work so that that happens. That was very clear today. They're very committed to making whatever we need to work for families.
Thank you.
Sure.
Diane, this is Nan again. Is there someone leading the vision for the family choice plan? Just by the quick survey of numbers, we're talking, you know, anywhere between, you know, probably 10 to 20% of the population choosing that. Is there someone that is answering questions about what that's going to look like specifically?
Yes, right now, Ashley Thompson and Chris Campo are meeting with some teachers and principals to get that up and going. One of the things that we needed, Mrs. Savage, really was the understanding of our staff returning. And, you know, that survey went out, or that questionnaire went out last week. So that we will have a clear vision next Friday that we will be distributing to families for that and then heading that up.
I just had it. Kind of a question about the fact that there's not going to be any visitors or volunteers allowed in the buildings. So obviously, you know, any of us that have gone to visit buildings or even like with the Good Apple Awards, we know how vitally important all those volunteers are in our buildings. So what kinds of ways are you looking at to help out our staff?
Yeah, so remember, first of all, we're saying during the school day. So we could have volunteers come in before or after school, but really from a safety and health perspective, we feel like that's where we need to be to start the school year for sure. So one of the challenges with principals is kind of re-looking at their staff and looking at maybe an aid that was used in a different way when all kids were there to provide additional support to teachers. So I'm sure there will be some realignment of duties and responsibilities than we've had traditionally.
Right.
And it's sad for us because our PTOs are so amazing and support so many opportunities. And a couple of them were on the advisory committee and were disappointed too, but at the same time they understood. So we'll look for ways that we can maybe do some unique things to highlight our PTOs as well as the year goes on.
Okay, thank you.
In regards to the SAC programs, so I understand that the before and after SAC program is at the school. Where will be the 54 students A and B programming? Where would those students be located?
Our plan tentatively is to use MHS. There's some large spaces that can be sectioned off to meet the requirements. So Ryan and his team are working on that currently.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you for that presentation. I know it's going to be up for approval later in our agenda. So you're all done then, Diane, with your report?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much again. And thank you again to the task force members. Okay, next up we have the treasurer report.
Okay, well, for my report, I'm gonna give a kind of an update on the Permanent Improvement Fund and the Permanent Improvement Fund forecast. Actually, to start off, our business manager, Ryan, is actually going to give an update on some of the fiscal year 2021 projects that have been taking place. So I'll let him kick it off.
Hi, Ryan.
Thanks, Todd. Hi. It's good to see all of you, sort of. So I'm going to do a quick highlight of some of the stuff we've had going on this summer. As you know, every summer we go through a series of projects for district improvement. The first one I'll talk, I think Billy's got a couple of pictures he can show you, but the first one I'm going to talk about just briefly is around the ECHS cafeteria area. We have replaced all those windows, so this was not probably the safest situation in the world. Some of the ceilings around these windows, the ceiling around the windows had kind of decayed, and this is the safer tempered glass where if it breaks, you know, students aren't going to be really in danger. So this was a nice upgrade for the kids. Plus it looks a lot better. There's more light coming in just with the new glass. It kind of a small addition, but if you walk in that space, you'll notice it right away. And that project is now 100% complete. The other project at the ECHS, Ken Chaffin and I started talking almost, well, it was probably last fall, just about the need to address the growing population at the ECHS. We talked about a few options and we landed on this space, which during the renovation of the building was taken offline, I believe, to assist with power distribution, but we were able to work through the power issues and turn, I believe, what was an old consumer sciences room into a pretty large classroom space. As you can see there, it's turned out very nicely. It's moved along quickly. And this will be probably of particular value now because it is a very large classroom area that you could probably get a pretty healthy number of kids in there even at distance. So the only thing really left to do in there is some of the trim on the floor and the and sealing the floor. It's all up to code. Fire safety is good to go. There's two entrances. It's all new ceiling grid in there, new lights. It's really turned out to be a pretty nice space. couple of asphalt projects. Well, we have a district-wide asphalt project going on, but some of the more exciting elements of the asphalt happened at Bunsold. So as you know, we put this nice, beautiful stadium in there, and now we've got a nice, beautiful path to get there, but we've also made it very safe for everyone. One of the issues when we put this in was simply foot traffic. And if you went out to one of those freshman football games and we opened up, you saw it got a little crazy with parking and so on. So we tried to address some of those issues. Sometimes you just don't know that stuff until it evolves and you kind of live in the space and you see how people are going to do things. But so you can see we have a crosswalk here. This is just in front of that north parking lot. There will be a swing gate there. The paving is all done and the gates just need to be installed at this point. So what they would do during an event is just close off this loop, and in a second you'll see there's a gate on the other side as well to protect pedestrians. So you can see there's a new swing gate on the, kind of the left side of that picture. And then one really nice addition here is we added this essentially handicap parking that is right up next to the gate to get into the facility. So we were able to, in this project, really address one of the needs. As you know, out there, the main parking is not particularly close to this facility. So we were able to carve out some space and add roughly 10 parking spots there that will be identified as handicap parking during events. And my screen's a little blocked, but if you just look sort of just to the right, just to the left of this, that is where the other gate will go. And what that also does is protect pedestrians from crossing back and forth from the open gate, where we have a restroom in the building that folks can use as well. So we've added parking spaces, and we have definitely made it safer for folks who are coming in to watch events as we have kind of closed off that loop. And again, the asphalt district-wide is really pretty much done at this point. Just one more part of the asphalt project. We've addressed some of the playground issues at Navin as well. That's been a little tricky, but we've got it figured out for now. Lots of striping, safety striping across the district. Just very quickly also, we had a handful of roofing projects to complete. No major overhauls, or there were a couple of larger areas, but some specified area work at a lot of our buildings, well, about half of our buildings. And then we have had, we've had on the table for a while to deal with copper piping at Raymond. The EPA asked us to change all that piping out to PVC. We had some concerns about the time it would take to do this project because it's a large scope. The good news is they are essentially done. So it's gone very smoothly. Slagle has been a great partner in getting this work done. And there should not be any delay. I'm cautiously optimistic that we'll get all of our testing back and we'll be ready to go. But the good news is, as far as the actual physical work to be done there, they are quite literally wrapping up this week. So that's going very well. So that's just a quick overview of some of the projects we had going. I don't know if anyone has any questions about those items. All right.
I guess we can say that that was one positive of the shutdown, was that we could get started on Raymond. Get that done. So
there was some definite concern that could cause a delay, which obviously nobody would want coming off of the spring, so that was a relief to be able to get rolling there. Just also, while I've got the floor or the screen, whatever you want to call it, just run over a couple of the highlights regarding our our custodial team and some of our approach to addressing the cleaning concerns for the coming school year. And I believe this is articulated in the report that will come out after the board meeting. So I think you'll be able to see all of this written out, but well, most of it anyway. So I'll start with throughout the summer, particularly when we, when our buildings became vacant during the spring, we took that opportunity to enroll our custodial team in some professional development courses. I'm not sure if they'd really done that before, but I will say it was very welcomed by the staff. They enjoyed the opportunity to get into some online learning. And up until really, they're still going on. They've had 11 courses to enroll in. They've done a great job getting into those. These range from learning about the coronavirus, learning about best practices in cleaning and disinfecting, all the way to dealing with stress and feeling overwhelmed in their job. So the response to that's been very positive. I think it's been good for our team, and obviously ultimately it'll be good for our buildings and our school district. But just a quick wraparound on that too. I've been working with some of the custodians to develop a handbook specific to custodians to develop some standards and best practices going into the school year. Also, that's been pretty well received by the group. They've had some good input on that as we've worked through it. A couple of things that we'll have here as we have examined what are the best ways to attack COVID. I think Billy's got a picture of this one too. This is our new weapon in the war on COVID. It's quite a machine. We looked at a lot of options. This one really brought together the best of a couple of worlds. Would have been nice for you to see it in person today. I'm sure we could arrange it if you'd like to give it a test run. It gets great gas mileage. It has a real fine mist. We upgraded the cleaner that we use with this too. That I should say the disinfectant. It has a shorter sit time, and it's a little more potent, particularly to human coronavirus. And really what you do is you turn it on, it's ready to go. As soon as you turn it on, it runs on, it charges, and it's just a quick pull of the trigger. You kind of swipe your hand across and you're good to go. And that disinfectant is a no-touch disinfectant. So as soon as it's sprayed on any hard surface, this particular agent only requires about a 3-minute wait time. So it's ready to go right away, and we just made that upgrade actually to that agent. So that actually, when you multiply that out over lots and lots of classrooms, that 5 minutes or so that we gain in that time is pretty valuable. So that is our new machine. You can see the handle there, it rolls, so the guys and the ladies who are working don't have to actually really carry anything, which was one of the advantages of that particular model. So and it's economically sound as well. As it really is a fine mist. The agent will go quite a long way as we start using these. Now, we just got these and they're just being distributed. The training isn't a long training, but like anything, you just kind of got to get used to it and work it into your plan. So with that, obviously this becomes a big tool. We have another tool that we brought on, which is a microfiber Trident mop system, so that we can address things like lunch tables without the typical sort of bucket and rag. We've got a little more sophisticated with that, and each building is going to be equipped with those. It's quicker, it's more effective, and they're one-time use. So you go through a table, you take the mop head off and you pick another one up. And this also helps us with separating some issues with peanut allergies and things like that, so that we're keeping the kids safer. So as I said, you'll probably see this plan in the report, but I'll just run through the bullet points quickly. we're obviously going to try to reduce the amount of things we have in classrooms that can be handed between students. Teachers and staff will certainly be a part of the plan to keep things clean and safe. We are in this together. It's going to take everyone, all hands on deck, to get at this efficiently. We do regularly circulate the air in our buildings. We have barometric measuring in our buildings. It's automated. It regulates the pressure in our building to keep air coming in and going out. So we're recirculating air. We can increase the amount of air we bring in. There's just always a balance to what the most efficient way to do it is, but we will monitor that as things get going. And we've always done that, but just to make a point of it, we do circulate the air out of the building and bring fresh air in. Bus drivers will play a part, obviously. They will be wiping down their buses after each route. Tabletops and high touch areas will be cleaned throughout lunch periods. Obviously, with our Mister machine, the goal is to touch as many common areas and hard surfaces as we possibly can. We also have another machine specifically that we use with restrooms that we've had before, which is a disinfectant, no-touch cleaning agent as well. Obviously, we're hoping that students will learn valuable lessons during this time. With four kids of my own, I will welcome teachers asking them to clean up after themselves during a class. But again, we're all going to have kind of a teamwork approach to this. Obviously, we're going to address trash cans quickly and as frequently as possible. Ceiling tiles we will replace as quickly as needed. Classrooms will be disinfected by custodial teams each off day during the week and daily as schedules dictate. Scheduled gatherings and gymnasiums, which I don't think we're going to have much of or in this school year, but we would obviously address those after every gathering with the disinfectant process. And that's about it. The one kind of tricky issue here is any, upholstered items. We don't really have a great process to deal with that. It's the good old scrubber and soap and water. So that creates some issues with non-hard surfaces. So ran through that pretty quick. But if you have any questions, I'll be happy to try to answer them.
Well, thanks.
Go ahead, Dave. Yeah, I just want to say, I know that over the many years I've been associated with the district, the custodial staff has always done an amazing job. I know, and it sounds like they're stepping up their game from what they've done in the past. I had really hoped to test drive that new no-touch mister. I appreciate the picture. I am really pleased that we're investigating best practices and best equipment to try and make sure that we create the safest possible environment for the kids. I know that with your leadership with the diligent work of all the custodial staff, that we're going to have our buildings in great shape for the kids. And I really do appreciate that. It's not something that oftentimes gets talked about, but it is something that's vitally important. So thank you very much, Ryan.
You bet. We've said it in every meeting with the custodial team. They're the front line. So, and they're buying in, they're ready to go. So our buildings will be ready.
Ryan, do you have those for every building? The Mister?
Yes, in fact, we have more than one for the larger buildings. And if the situation arose where we felt like we needed to add to that arsenal, we would be able to do that.
Okay, Okay. Do you have any concerns about the carpet in some of the buildings?
Well, you know, we've talked about rugs probably needing to not use the rugs this year. The carpets, the guidance allows us to just vacuum carpets as usual. Hopefully teachers will use, you know, I've seen a lot of those kind of plastic jiggle seats for the younger kids when they do sit on the floor. So hopefully they'll use that, but we will be cleaning the carpets as usual. It's just, you know, some of the rugs might pose a little bit of a problem. So we might not be using those, but the carpets will be okay with regular cleaning according to the guidance.
Thank you so much, Ryan. I really appreciate you, you know, setting up that professional development for your staff. Like you said, it sounds like they were really excited about that and glad you had that opportunity. So appreciate your leadership, and we look forward to test driving that Mr. sometime soon.
You can arrange it whenever you like.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, Ryan has done a great job of taking ownership on that student safety part. I didn't realize I'd be following high def pictures and a custodial weapon, or I just would have went first. So I can now pull up my boring PowerPoint, please, Billy. Okay, you can go to the next page. Okay, so I'm just going to do kind of a high-level look at the PI forecast. First, we're going to look at our fiscal year 20 actuals since June 30 was the end of fiscal year 20. Fiscal year 20 revenues came in at $5.77 million. This pie chart here kind of breaks out, categorizes the revenue. Our largest chunk there in the light green is real estate taxes, which is $3.6 million. Are you getting the black line that I'm?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't know. I know Billy was having some issues with doing full screen or something.
Hello, Dick. Hello, Sue.
There we go.
Thank you, Billy.
The next biggest revenue source there in the orange is our TIF revenue, which came in just over $1 million. On the tax side as well, we've got the public utility personal property tax, almost $730,000, homestead and rollback reimbursements. And then that other in red is $170,000. That is constituted by our donations for the stadium project. So before I move on to the next slide, I want you to keep in mind a couple numbers. One, the real estate tax in the light green, that $3.6 million. And the TIF revenue in the orange of the $1 million. Okay, so let's go to the next slide. So for comparison purposes, I wanted to show you what this looked like back in fiscal year 17. And what this really does is show really the beauty of how our no new millage permanent improvement levy is working. So in fiscal year 17, total revenue in the PI fund was $4.5 million. Okay, so as you remember, fiscal year 20, we were at $5.7 million. So we're an increase in revenue in that fund of about $1.2 million. Okay, so looking at the light green real estate tax, in fiscal year 17, that number was $2.1 million. So with that two mills that moved over to the PI fund, that's obviously going to increase the real estate taxes. So that number went from 2.1 million up to $3.6 million. So that's an increase of $1.5 million. Then look at the TIF fund in the orange. Back in fiscal 17, that number was $1.6 million. Well, in fiscal 20, that number went down to just barely over $1 million. The reason being, as part of that no new millage PI levy, we're now taking $1.7 million of TIF revenue and putting that into the general fund each year. Now, those numbers don't add up because fiscal 17, we were getting 1.6. Fiscal 20, we're now still getting 1 million, but we reduced it by 1.7. The reason that is because our TIF revenue in total compared to back in fiscal 17 has increased by over $1 million per year. So, you know, what we were able to do with that no new millage PI levy, along with increases in TIF revenues, revenues in the PI fund have increased by $1.2 million. Revenues in the general fund have increased by $1.7 million, and taxes did not increase. So that just really illustrates how well that's working, and it's really made for a very healthy permanent improvement fund that's allowed those projects that Ryan just showed. So let's go to the next slide. This slide shows expenditures, actual expenditures in fiscal year 20, a little higher than normal because of the stadium project. So we were at a little over $11 million in fiscal 20. The brown there is the largest section. That's for the stadium, a little over $7 million to finish the project up. I won't read all the other ones. Transportation there is a little smaller than usual, only $64,000. That's because we allowed transportation to kind of borrow against fiscal 20 back in fiscal 19. So they bought a couple buses. They needed a couple additional buses then, so we let them buy those ahead of time. So they only bought one bus in fiscal year 20, or it was a van. And those projects that Ryan showed, that's part of that maintenance line in the green right beside transportation. And obviously spending significant money on technology each year with the one-to-one new curriculum and then the asphalt that you were shown as well. Go to the next slide. So you know, if you're gonna do a 20-year forecast, which is, you know, really impossible to gauge, you know, what's revenue going to look like 10 years from now, you know, when is a roof that's in perfectly good condition right now going to need to replace maybe 10 or 15 years from now. So flexibility is really the key to make something like this work. So just a few of the ways that we're able to have some of this flexibility. In the short term, some of that flexibility comes from, for instance, the $2.7 million advance that the general fund gave the PI fund last year. That's still set to be fully repaid within the next couple years. We didn't pay any in fiscal year 20, which you'll see when I show the ending cash balance that we really could have, and we're on pace to do it in 2 years, which is perfectly fine. But again, that's an area where we're able to, you know, adjust when or by how much we pay that advance back, because the general fund right now is in a place where that advance is not, you know, driving, having to cut costs or anything. So we've got several years to work with. The stadium loan repayment, we took that that commercial loan right now in the forecast, as well as assuming paying off the advance in 2 years. I'm also assuming that we're paying off that loan early within 5 years to decrease interest costs. But again, that flexibility comes if there were a major cut in revenues for some reason, or there were some major reason that expenses needed to go up. You know, that loan could be paid off slower. That would free up money. Each year in the forecast, I've got assumptions for inflationary costs. Those inflationary basically budget can be spread over as needed. So that actually gives kind of some discretionary funds that can be used. You know, if for instance, we assumed a certain number for pavement, but you know, this is a year where pavement costs just skyrocketed. We've got a budget line that allows us to account for those increases. And finally, in kind of usually what would be the a last resort, because we don't want to take away from a project that needs to be done, or kind of kick the can down the road. But if necessary, we can adjust projects. You know, if we needed to, for instance, hold off on an asphalt project for 1 year, that usually would free up about $500,000. So, that also gives us a little bit of flexibility. So the next slide will show our projected ending cash balances. So as I mentioned, fiscal year 20, you're seeing an ending cash balance right around $3.5 million. That, as I said, that's a little inflated because I didn't pay those advances, that advance back in fiscal 20. I'm going to do that in fiscal year 21. So you're going to see that number go down some. But again, as I mentioned, with these ending cash balances, we're positive throughout the entire forecast. And I'm in this assumptions are paying off the advances within the next 2 years, as well as paying off the loan in the next 5 years. You'll see the spike in up to fiscal year 28, up to around $4 million. And then a big dip around fiscal year 32. That's really a timing thing, because in those out years, one of the biggest costs we're expecting to incur is going to be roofing replacements. It's kind of hard to say exactly when that will need to happen. So there's kind of an assumption of numbers are kind of plugged in there. I'm sure it will change, when it needs to be done, or what it's going to cost, or, which building needs done first and those kinds of things. But there are assumptions in there for each and every roof that would need replaced. So it kind of gives comfort that even with those, we're still able to have a positive cash balance throughout the forecast. So that's all I've got. If there's any questions.
No questions. I mean, comments. Okay, go ahead, Dick.
Yeah. I'm sorry for the delay. A little frustrating, I know, but Todd, I want to thank you. I know the PI forecast is based on an assessment that was done a couple of years ago. A lot of planning went into that. A lot of time went into it to look at our entire district and try to lay out all of the future needs. But I know for me, it gives me a lot of confidence making decisions, knowing that we're going to have a balanced budget, that we have some flexibility to address unusual and new kinds of things. The one question I have is, there was some money that was released in the CARES fund. And I know this is early because it just recently happened. The board, or there have been a couple of releases of money. How does that fit into the PI fund, general fund, so forth?
Yeah, so that new money you're talking about, I believe what they're calling the Coronavirus Relief Fund, in Marysville,
yes,
receiving $275,000. So that's federal funding. The good part of what they're doing with that money is they're allowing you to go back to, I believe, March 1st, so where any expenditures that you made for things such as, safety and cleaning equipment due to the virus. So this funding is specifically for that type of purchase. So for instance, those cleaning equipment we just saw pictures of in Ryan's presentation, those have already been purchased. We'll actually be able to go back, and I can't, off the top of my head, I don't know which fund we use to purchase those, probably the PI fund. We'll actually be able to go back and reimburse the Permanent Improvement Fund out of this Coronavirus Relief Fund. And then also going forward, we've got a lot of safety equipment that we're looking to have for the opening of school. That fund's going to be used for that as well.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, Todd, and I think your presentation just really highlights again what a incredible idea you had with that levy, with the no new tax PI transfer and all that kind of good stuff. So, and really, it comes back to the fact that we can maintain everything just keeps our students and staff safer as well. So that's what it's all about at the end of the day. Thank you. Thank you very much for that presentation. Good news.
Yep.
Is that it for you?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Then for my report, I sent out my student achievement report a couple days ago and shared with you some modules from the Kerwin Institute at Ohio State University about implicit bias. And there are four different modules. And I think you can go through and they're all maybe about 10 minutes long, but just kind of a nice, either a refresher or education for you about implicit bias. And then also the Success Magazine that always includes links to a lot of different other resources about student achievement. And just a reminder also that OSPA continues to hold virtual town halls every Wednesday from 4 to 5. They're free events. You do need to sign up on their website. They always include legal updates, a chance to kind of network, resources, and recently they broke down the state guidelines into 4 areas and are planning to focus each week on one of those areas. So like on July 8th, they focused on the health and safety component of the guidelines. Yesterday, they were to focus on the education models. Next week, it's labor and employment. And then July 29th, I think they're just going to kind of have a miscellaneous free-for-all to cover anything else. OSPA has also asked districts to share their plans with them once they are approved, and they are going to be posting them on their website as kind of a one-stop shop for anybody in the state, anybody anywhere, to really look at all the different plans that are out there. And then another thing, let's see if I can pull this up here or not. I think you guys all got this in the mail, but OSBA is starting a new recognition program for board members. And I know we don't really do this for recognition, but it is nice, especially when I think a lot of us do takes the extra time to try and attend some professional development seminars, things like that. And so OSBA has this new STAR award in addition to their Master Board Member Award. So I just encourage you all to look at details of this award and consider maybe applying for it. And let's see, next month, I would like to schedule another special meeting to review and revise our work plan for the 2021 year. And I'm looking tentatively at Wednesday, August 12th. So I'll be in touch with you and just ask you to check your calendar to see if you think that would work. By that point, we would have Diane's and Todd's goals for the year as well, so we can make sure that we're all aligned and moving in the same direction. And then my last comment is just that later in our agenda, we're going to be acting on compensation recommendations for our superintendent and treasurer. And both of their contracts had outlined compensation increases in years 1, 2, and 3, but directed a reopening for compensation only in years 4 and 5. So Todd is getting ready to start his 5th year, and Diane is getting ready to start her 4th year. So just kind of an explanation of why that's on the agenda. That's it for my report. We have a legislative report.
Yes, a brief one. The legislature is on summer mode, so there's not much going on in Columbus. We all received, I believe, notices that the Ohio Controlling Board approved some distributions of funds. I asked Todd a question about that. That was nice to see. Are some concerns. Diane mentioned internet access, particularly for families that might be low income or live in rural areas. It's difficult to get some high speed internet, and I've communicated to both Tracy Richardson and Dave Burke, that Senator Burke, that that needs to be addressed if we're going to be able to do the types of remote learning that it seems like we're going to need to do. So that's a topic of major concern. Another one that is kind of hanging around with the state legislature is school district liability. I understand we're rather fortunate in that we have some coverage through our insurance company. And Diane mentioned earlier maintaining 6 foot spacing, social distancing was important because that helps or that qualifies us with our insurance company as being and acting in an appropriate manner. One last thing, June 22nd, I was one of 16 board members of the state of Ohio that participated in a conference call with Senator Brown. The focus of my comments to the senator were on expanding internet access, and I supplied to the senator's office in an email that followed the conversation data that we got from our surveys, and I got a letter back from his chief staff person. And they really appreciated that, as it gave them kind of a snapshot of what was going on in our school district, and it gave them a more clear picture of exactly what was taking place. So thank you to Diane and everybody involved in that survey. That was key information. It was well received in Washington. So that's my report. Everyone will be getting the written report following the meeting. So thank you.
Thank you, Dick. Let's see, do we have a safety report?
No, there have been no meetings between our last meeting, Sue, to now. I think mostly everything right now is safety around the COVID issue. So
right.
Just stay tuned.
That's okay. Great, thank you. All right, next item on our agenda. I would accept a motion to approve the draft minutes from both our June 18th regular meeting and our July 13th special meeting.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Powers.
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Any questions, comments, corrections? Okay, then a roll call, please.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. All right. Next on our agenda is I would accept the motion to approve a 3% increase for both the superintendent and treasurer contracts for the 2020-21 school year.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Any comments, questions?
I would like to say that the situation this spring with COVID certainly turned the school district upside down, and both our treasurer and our superintendent responded in an amazing fashion. They've been able to keep the district righted and they move forward. Additionally, I would point out that as many people faced changes in their employment and so forth, the employees of our district, the teachers and staff are receiving their regular paychecks and they are in line to get increases in salary that were already planned and budgeted for. And what the superintendent and treasurer are receiving is very much in line with what all other school employees will be looking to receive this coming year. at least at a minimum, some will actually, because of steps for teachers and so forth, maybe other employees will see other increases. And lastly, our school district is without question one of the leading school districts in the state of Ohio. And that position is not by accident. It's the result of a lot of hard work and a lot of dedicated leadership. And so for those reasons, I'm going to vote to support this.
I have a couple things I wanted to mention also. The graduation, although it was not the traditional graduation that everyone would have wanted, I thought Marysville School Districts did a wonderful job of recognizing our graduating class. The billboards, the signs uptown, the baskets, and it was definitely not only a district, but a community effort. So I thought that was definitely worth noting. Also, the increase in social-emotional learning that's taken place this year. We were able to have a lot of things in place when the shutdown hit in March, and we were able to keep contact with a lot of kids that were struggling with social-emotional issues, and I think that was very beneficial to our district and our community as a whole.
Thank you, Nan. Any comments, Brian? Okay, I just wanted to remind everyone, and for those of you who are watching, one of the main responsibilities of the board is the evaluation of the superintendent and treasurer, and that took place earlier this week. So I just want to say I am so proud of this district, and I know that the importance and the value of good leadership on the financial side, which is kind of what that's my background. I know we have worked so hard to put ourselves in a position where we haven't had to ask for new money since 2008. And based on our five-year forecast, we're going to be able to stick to our promises, even after dealing with significant state funding cuts for this past current fiscal year and the upcoming fiscal year. Most importantly, we've been able to add a multitude of new programs and opportunities for our students thanks to strategic financial planning, strong working relationship between our superintendent and treasurer, and an ever-growing list of community partnerships. Instructionally, like Dick said, we've been in the forefront of personalized learning, and Nan mentioned the social-emotional learning. It's been evidenced by many, many visits from districts across the country. Of course, that was pre-COVID. And invitations to present at a variety of seminars. So I'm also really grateful for Diane's leadership during the shutdown. And as we've been planning for this next school year, there have been communications, analyzing survey data, assembling a task force, working collaboratively with medical professionals and neighboring superintendents, supporting our staff, organizing the breakfast and lunch deliveries, all this while managing to switch to remote learning virtually overnight. I don't think that left much time for sleep for Diane. So with that, I just want to recognize how challenging this whole situation has been, and the fact that we're going to, it will be until we reach some level of comfort with the vaccine or new information. And I couldn't feel better about the leadership and our entire district staff that we have in place right now. So if there are no more comments, I will call for a roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Same.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. All right. Next on our agenda, make sure I don't skip anything, I would accept a motion to approve the treasurer CFO items.
So moved.
Was that you, Amy?
Yes, it was.
Okay, motion by Mrs. Powers.
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Any comments or clarification?
Yeah, just a couple things. One, a lot of appropriations changes where we're really updating the estimates that were approved back in June. Also, as I mentioned, June 30 was the end of the fiscal year, so that's a cash flow of all actuals. We were pretty much on track with our May forecast. Obviously, there's a lot of differences compared to the November forecast, but pretty much on track where we thought we were going to be once we did our May forecast. We had other revenues were a little less because we weren't charging fees, for any student fees at that point. But then at the same time, we saved some significant six figures of expenditures on with the school being closed down on utilities, school supplies, those kinds of things. The biggest difference, though, is I talked about before. Originally, I had shown those advances, the PI fund as well as the self-insurance advance, at least partially being repaid in fiscal 20. I decided to hold off and wait to do that in fiscal 21. As I noted, the PI fund is already projected to pay, budgeted to pay off in the next 2 years. The self-insurance fund, to me, there's a little more volatility there. As of right now, it looks good that we will be able to pay it off. But I'm going to wait, you know, till we get to the end of the year and see how claims go, because that's really is fully dependent on claims and if we have a good or bad claims year. So we'll just keep track of that. Looking ahead to fiscal 21, we do have numbers now for our state funding. As you remember, back in May and June, our fiscal year 20 state funding was reduced by about $1.03 million, which is just under 5% cut for us. The governor has said that our fiscal year 21 funding is going to have basically an identical cut spread out over the entire fiscal year. So our funding will be reduced by $1.03 million in this current fiscal year. That's actually good news because the five-year forecast that we approved back in May had assumed a 10% reduction. So that's actually going to put $1 million of state revenue back into the five-year forecast.
And I know there was just one other, an after-the-fact purchase order, which was just kind of timing issue. Yeah,
so the after-the-facts, those are where the invoice is dated prior to the purchase order. That actually, I don't think that was actually even the fault of the person on there. I think that was a timing issue with when a board meeting was and when should that be done, and it just kind of got missed. So we're putting that in now. And it basically is saying that even though the invoice is dated prior to the purchase order, you know, this is a valid purchase and, you know, we want to go forward with it.
Gotcha. Any questions or comments? Nice job forecasting again. And roll call, please.
Thank you. Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. And next up on our agenda, I would accept a motion to approve the restart the school year plan that we heard about earlier tonight.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, motion by Mr. Smith and second by Ms. Savage. Any comments?
So I just wanted to say that it's going to be very important, kind of no matter what schedule we start at, that teachers are going to have to spend time building relationships with kids, because even if we start at one of the lower plans, if we go all remote from Thanksgiving to Christmas vacation, we're going to be on that online feature, and it's going to be very difficult to get children to perform for teachers that they don't know. So again, spending as much time as we can in that 2 days per week to help build relationships with the students. So And then looking forward to having, you know, the additional staff people in the buildings to help support the teaching staff with whether it's the virtual academy or the online learning. It's going to be new for kind of everybody, but hopefully it's going to be a lot more structured than it was when we had to do it with no notification whatsoever. So.
If I can, I think the plan is absolutely amazing. I recognize in that all the time and effort, appreciate the flexibility because we still don't know most of what we need to know about choosing a plan. Things changed today as Union County went from orange to red and so forth. We're all in this together, and that's been kind of the watchword of things. I know back in March, there were questions about the virus, how dangerous it was, how it was going to get spread and so forth. There were questions about our behavior. Should people wear masks, social distance, do all those kinds of things? And some of the answers have come forward. We've got clear and convincing evidence. While we have differences of opinions on a number of things, there are facts, hard, unquestionable evidence that have become self-evident as we move forward. We know that masks make a difference. We know that social distancing makes a difference. We know that hand washing and sanitizing make a difference. And I'm pleased to see those as kind of cornerstones of the district plan. But I think there's something that's been something else that's crystal clear. The only way we have a chance to open schools in a way that's going to be safe for the lives of our children is for the entire community to be willing to set aside their individual differences of opinion to accept with or without proof that we're all in this together, to recognize that we have a responsibility to others in our community that is greater than any individual belief or right, to adopt a unity of purpose and to adopt a single-minded focus on behaviors that have been shown to be effective in controlling this virus. I like the fact that we're setting August 3rd as the date for the decision. That gives us some time for people to get their behaviors at home and in our community aligned with the district plan. It gives the district a chance to look and see what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. We don't operate as a district in a vacuum. We're integrated into the community. It's obvious that the community's collective behavior will determine the success or failure of the educational opportunities that we offer our children. We, Marysville schools, are committed. And when children walk out of the school buildings, we need the entire community, regardless of individual health opinions, to do their part and be willing to provide the continuity of safe practices, wear masks, maintain social distance, avoid large gatherings that are going to be critical to the success of our district's plan. So.
Thank you, Dick. I'm sure that the presentation is going to generate lots and lots of questions. And I know Diane and her team are already working on a variety of support documents with different guidelines. I really appreciate the fact that at the beginning you called out how this is going to give us an opportunity to reimagine how we provide education. I know this year is going to be challenging, but it is going to give us a chance to try some new things, and who knows what we're going to learn in the process. I know we have great relationships with our families, with our staff. I want to thank them all for responding to the surveys, for reaching out with their questions, their concerns and suggestions, and for partnering with our staff to support their kids. We're going to need everyone to work together more than ever, just like Dick said. So finally, I just want to thank that task force again. Your time and efforts are really appreciated. So any other comments?
Just like to thank our whole district from Diane and Todd on down for everything that they have done for the kids, everything that they're doing now for the kids. It's exhausting to see how much that they go through to make sure that our children are taken care of. And I just want to say, I appreciate that from the top all the way down.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think we're ready for a roll call.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. We have a restart to school year plan. Next, I would accept a motion to approve the superintendent items.
So moved.
Was that you, Nan?
I'll second it.
Okay, that was Amy. So motion by Mrs. Powers, second by Mrs. Savage. Diane? Where is Diane? Do you have any comments? You're muted.
Sorry, I was talking away. Sorry about that. a few things I wanted to let you know that our hiring is complete. Except for we have remaining bus drivers to fill those positions. So you see the hires on tonight's agenda. You have approval of policies and some student teachers as well on tonight.
And it's pretty short one this time, isn't it? Yeah. Any questions or comments? You know, we talked a little bit about the policies last time. There's several, I think about some of the questions that have been posed to us about sick leave and teachers and things like that. So a couple of those policies address some of those issues, and they're based on just temporary legislation that goes through December 31st. So unless there's additional legislation passed, some of these policies are going to expire on December 31st. We're also delaying that OTES 2, and I know I had asked Diane about that, and kind of partially due to the training required to be certified to evaluate.
Correct. So, first of all, there were some issues with when it was going to be released, and then all of the trainings were going to be held in person at the time we had to make a decision, and none of us really felt comfortable that moving into this school year. So we talked to the union presidents as well and just decided that we'd stay where we were for another year. Seems like we've had enough shifting and changing parts that we need to kind of keep some things consistent too.
Sounds like a good idea to me. Okay.
Anticipate them.
I agree.
Diane, do we anticipate them eliminating the report card measurements and state testing for this upcoming year, considering most likely a lot of school districts are going to be on remote at least a large portion of the year?
I have not been told anything official of that manner. I know there are a lot of people talking about those same things right now. So I'll stay tuned and I'll let you know. I think that the state has demonstrated the importance of flexibility if you look at their plan as a kind of guidance to us. So my sense is they will follow that rule as well for flexibility.
Any other comments, questions? Okay, roll call, please.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Luke?
Can't hear you. Can you say that again, Todd?
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. And at this point, we are to our comments and questions from the board members. So let's see, Mr. Smith, your face is on the screen right now. So why don't you start us off?
All right. I want to thank all the people that were involved in putting together the district opening plan. I know that they took input from over 4,000 people in the community, parents and students. They weighed and considered all the different possibilities. I really appreciate the fact that our superintendent has done a nice job of creating a medical advisory board made up of local doctors in our community, local health department involved. So the plan that we have for moving forward is very much a locally developed, locally based plan, and it, you know, hopefully we'll work with continued input from the advisory group and the medical people also. I appreciate also everything that, as I mentioned earlier, the custodians and are doing to try to make sure that the environment students come in is safe. The report that we got earlier on Alt-K was just absolutely amazing. That was a good decision to put that program in place. So thank you to everybody. We got the year finished up and we're working to open up the next year. So
thank you. Mrs. Powers.
Just want to say I'm proud to be a monarch, and that I don't think there's any better district in the whole state of Ohio, and thank you all.
All right. Mr. Luke.
I wanted to echo some of the other comments, thanking people who worked on this reopening plan. I wish we knew better what we were facing in September, October, November, December, January, but at least we have a plan, and we have a plan that's flexible. We have a plan that protects the health of the staff and the students, and we have a plan that is going to make sure that our kids get educated as best as they possibly can. I really appreciate all the community input that you took as well. So thank you for putting that plan together, and we'll see what's happening in August.
All right, Ms. Savage.
Thank you to everyone for the coordination of the team. Thank you for them getting input, the teachers union for reaching out to the teaching staff and getting information from them, getting their input from them. And I just want to do a thank you to the teachers and the staff coming up for this upcoming year. It's going to be challenging, but I know that our teaching staff is up for the challenge.
Mr. Johnson.
Nothing to add.
Mrs. Allen.
Yes, I just have a couple things I wanted to remind all of you that we are starting a task force locally. I had mentioned it last time we were together, asked Mr. Chafin to lead that on equity and social justice. So stay tuned on that. He's headed home from vacation and we're meeting on that when he returns. I also wanted to let you know that we received word this week and had a interview for a grant we submitted in the summer, a very substantial literacy grant through ODE. We are a finalist, and we had a finalist interview this week. So we hope to find that out shortly if we're an award winner, which would be a substantial amount of money to the district. I also wanted to let you know that every Tuesday from here until the beginning of the school year, I've set up Zoom meetings for any staff members who want to just kind of talk, share, hear what's going on. I'll be highlighting some of the things with the plan, answering questions this week. As we're gearing up, I know there is substantial anxiety. I probably share a little bit of that anxiety and have for the past couple of months. This school year will put before us challenges like we've never seen before. I don't think there's a better group of people to rally behind than the staff here at Marysville in order to pull that off. But I do understand the anxiety and fear for sure. I think Mr. Smith said it best that each one of us have a personal responsibility to kind of layer those best practices as a part of our everyday habits in order for us to bring people together for school and for us to continue to move forward. So I encourage you to do that. Again, parents and community members appreciate the feedback. We're still going to be asking for feedback. There's lots of updates still to come. The next one you can expect to see is more on the operations side. So stay tuned for that in the next couple weeks.
Thank you. I just want to thank Sherry Bowserman again on her amazing job with that first year of the all kindergarten. That was really exciting to hear just how passionate she is and how the plans that she's got already for next year. And then as far as the work of the task force goes, I just want to encourage everybody to be respectful as we move through these next several months, because, you know, as Dick said, not everyone has the same opinion, but I just really would encourage that respect, because people are working their hardest to try and keep the safety of our kids and our staff at the forefront. While also doing the best job we can with educating and supporting the social emotional needs of our students. So anyways, we just need to keep we need to keep communicating and working together as a team. So with that, I would accept a motion to adjourn.
Moved.
Motion by Ms. Savage. Second by Ms. Savage. Roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries, and we are adjourned at 7:25. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Hey, Todd.
Yeah.
I'll have the audio file to you here as soon as I can, all right?
Oh, no hurry.
All right. It may be tomorrow morning until I send it to you, but I got to let it finish encoding after I stop the recording.
So. Yep, no problem. Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
Yep.
Bye.